Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
It's 7 minutes past the hour. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Elise Klink Show. Wow, what a week, huh? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, and I'm going to remind you of this several times in the show, to go to the website, thinkblink.com, and sign up for our newsletter. This week, on Thursday, when the newsletter comes out, we're going to offer something very special. The 9-part webinar series that I have created called Intentional Investor, all about investing in real estate, is finally ready. It's over 3 hours of really cool stuff. And it's really the masterclass that if we were going to do, have everybody come to another event, this is what we would do. We would teach people how to do real investing in real estate. And what I did was instead put it on video. And it's going to be ready this week. In fact, I just looked at the last piece of it. It's very exciting. And so Thursday we're going to release it. So you're going to want to be signed up for the newsletter, because on Thursday it's going to wow you. Absolutely wow you. And I'm so excited. I hope you want to take advantage of it. So go to thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink. We're already having conversations about the kind of coffee I'm having, which is very strong because I was up very late celebrating my friend Michael's 50th birthday last night. And we want you to be part of that conversation. So at Glink or thinkglink.com. And if you'd like to talk to me today, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lines are wide open. There's a whole lot of things to talk about today, but I have to start by just saying I am as devastated as any of you about what happened in Boston. And there were so many family members who were either involved with the Boston Marathon, friends who were running in it, that I didn't even realize. My son Alex goes to school in Boston now. It was such a scary, scary week. And to think that these two kids planted these bombs, it was sort of amazing. It felt like, Sam said, it felt like an episode of 24. Do you remember that show that was on, where you just, every minute ticked off and something else that was absolutely incredible happened? That was what we felt like with these Boston bombings, the Boston Marathon bombings, that there's just every minute was ticking by and something else was happening, something else that we felt like we had seen on television in a fiction show, and here it was in real life, and absolutely terrifying. Our friend Mark and Peter, crossed the finish line 25 minutes before the bombs exploded, and nobody knew where they were for a while because all the cell phone towers went down, and that was so terrifying for my friend Beth and her kids and all of us as we thought, oh no. My sister-in-law, Alice, who runs marathons, we thought she might be running, and she has often run the Boston Marathon. This year she didn't, but she had a whole bunch of friends who were running. So such a normal thing, running a marathon, and it turns into something so crazy. And, of course, in London, our thoughts are with all those people running. So anyway, we are doing a lot of coverage here at WSB in news about the Boston bombings, and, of course, we had the Ricin letters. There was just so much of this terrifying news this week. Very, very scary. So, of course, we're on top of it here at WSB. I hope you stay tuned for that. And then to real estate, happy to talk to you about that, of course. Very interesting to see what happened with unemployment this week. So, of course, unemployment ticked up. It's been ticking down, which is great. And it fell 0.6% over the course of a year, from 8.3% to 7.7%. This is the lowest it has been since 2008. And, of course, then it dropped to 7.6% in March. So we're down quite a bit. But in some metropolitan areas, and this is where I thought the better news was, there were drops in places where it has been very, very high. So in Chicago, for example, my hometown, where unemployment has been in excess of 10% for a really long time. It's now down below 10% to 9.5%. Boise, Idaho, which had an unemployment rate of 9.6% in February of 2010, they are now down to 6.5% unemployment, which is fantastic. Palm Coast, Florida, the unemployment rate fell 2.5 percentage points from a year ago. It's now 10.3% in February. So there are places where it's not doing as well, but we're still seeing sort of in general these numbers come down. The problem I'm having with unemployment is the problem it's been since, I don't know, since the recession began. It's not really because there are that many more new jobs being created. The dramatic drops in unemployment that we're seeing are because people have finally thrown their hands up and said, I've been unemployed for 3 years, 2 years, 4 years. I'm never getting a job. I quit. And I'm no longer looking for a job. Those people are counted as being out of the job market officially. And they're really not old enough to be out of the job market officially. They're not old enough to be retired. They have retired themselves from the job market. And so they count not as being part of this labor participation rate. When you look at the labor participation rate, it's the lowest it's been in decades. It's really low. It's like 63%. Very, very low. And so we're not being productive. Now you look at, and this was a really interesting story in the New York Times this week, you look at the people who are working in part-time jobs instead of full-time jobs, right? They'd like to be in full-time jobs with benefits, but they can't. And so they're doing several part-time jobs trying to make ends meet. And they're taking jobs. They may be trained in a profession like decorating. You know, they're a licensed interior design consultant, let's say. And they're a cashier right now because that's the only job that they can get. And it's part-time and it has no benefits. And trying to get a job as an interior designer has been impossible. In fact, I have a friend who's been an interior designer. He's in his 50s, late 50s. And he was an interior designer with a bunch of top design firms in Chicago for a very long time. Lost his job in the recession when commercial real estate went out of favor. Nobody was hiring people like him, and he's got a couple of little tiny independent clients, you know, piecemeal together, but it's like a third of what his job really was. No benefits and just a really impossible time for him. It's just really, really hard. And to watch how over 3 or 4 years he and his wife Judith have just eaten away at all of the savings, at all their 401k, everything that they've had. Really tough. Really tough. And so it's interesting to look out and sort of say, well, we are seeing an improvement, but we're not seeing as much of an improvement as we would like to see. And I know that's got to be the case for you, too, because certainly Atlanta has not been immune to what has happened. Atlanta has the highest, I think, percentage of foreclosures, maybe even the highest number now, left in the country. Where it's been in Southern California, these foreclosures have been sopped up. Over in Atlanta, you're not seeing that at the same pace. You are at some degree, and we are seeing people start to have bidding wars, but there's a lot of unsold inventory. There's a lot of housing that still needs to be absorbed, that isn't being absorbed. And that means there's a huge opportunity for you still to get in and buy investment real estate. There are a tremendous number of opportunities, a tremendous number of properties that could be purchased, that could be the foundation for a huge amount of wealth that can be created. Which is why, again, you know, I did this webinar series, because I want to show you that this is not an impossible thing to do. Now, on Twitter, I keep telling you to go back to Twitter. There was the conversation is just going there. But Elisa, who is listening and tweets me every single week, said that she thinks the drop with unemployment is people dropping out. She agrees with that. She's been unable to find employment, and she's a master's degree. I'm telling you, I'm not making this stuff up. We are not making the best use of our resources, our human resources. There are so many people who could do so much more, who could help make this country so much more productive. And when I talk about rebuilding America one house at a time, your financial house, right, is where this begins. It begins with you and figuring out how you can be more productive. And then to broaden that out, companies figuring out how you can be more productive. And finding that match, and somewhere along the line, and this is, and I say this as an employer, right? It's, I have 10 employees, and we're always looking for new people. Somewhere along the line, there's been a disconnect between what people think they can do, and as an employer, how people present themselves with what they can do. So we'll post a job, and we know what we're looking for, and the people who come through the door, and this is why I feel very, very strongly that there's just so much untapped talent. I can't make use of this. It's not what I'm looking for. But I post a job for an entry-level writer position, and I get lawyers with 25 years of experience applying for it. There's such a mismatch with people who are so talented and so gifted and have so much to bring to the table with what they're actually looking for. And I would love to figure out a way to match these really high-quality people who I know are out there and I know have so much to give and would love nothing more than to be employed full-time doing something interesting, even if it is slightly different than what they were doing, even if they can't be an interior designer anymore. You know, I know that Peter, who's my friend, who's in this situation, there's so much that he would like to give. And there's so much for years of experience that he could guide young designers, for example. He could bring so much more to the table for these architecture firms. There's just not enough business yet. We're just not moving fast enough. And we're doing better than everywhere else in the country. I mean, sorry, everywhere else in the world right now. I was listening to Wes Moss as he was finishing up his show, and he was saying how we're the best of, you know, a bad situation all over the world. You know, I would frame it a little bit differently, but I think he's exactly right, which is that we are the best bet. America, I would bet on you every single time. And I've been saying that since all of this started in 2007, when we looked out and I said, the world is crashing and it feels really scary, and I would bet on America 20 years out than anywhere else in the world. And I still feel that way. We just have to rebuild our own base first. We've just got to get you being productive as much as you can and get the cogs of that wheel moving. 404-872-0750 is our number, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Happy to hear your thoughts, answer your questions about mortgage, real estate. Real estate mortgage rates dropped just about to the historic lows again this week. We'll talk about why when we come back here on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. Let's start with yours here on News Talk WSB. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy of Duffy Realty of Atlanta. Rhonda, welcome back.
Thanks.
So what makes a good short sale listing agent?
Oh, my gosh.
You only have 2 minutes.
Yeah. The list is long. It's plentiful. You know, I think it takes a lot of experience. I'm the number one short sale agent in Georgia 2 years in a row, and I had a coach in the beginning, and he gave me his surmising. Of course, he was a coach. He didn't really do this himself, and it depends on what region you're in, what area, what standards are there. But I think it takes a lot of experience. I think it takes enough experience to know when the yacht has shifted course. You know, a lot of times with short sales, the lenders change what they're doing. They decide that they're going off in this direction, and so you have to alter your plans. And so, to me, a great short sale agent comes from experience.
So that's kind of interesting, because I feel the same way. You want somebody who's been around the block enough, who understands when lenders change their tune, and they're in touch enough with these lenders to really get where the market is going. So if you are buying and you want to use a short sale, get a short sale person, somebody who's really
right,
been around the block, you want somebody who has contacts across the board and really understands the process. If you're trying to sell your house and it is unfortunately a short sale, I think you'd want the same thing, somebody who's doing it day in and day out.
And you hate to say this, but you know, experience makes rules. Okay?
What do you mean by that? That's
sort
of interesting.
We're really tight on how we do stuff. We have zero flexibility when it comes to package production, the way that homes are listed, the way they're marketed. We have zero flexibility when it comes to a buyer wanting to make a lesser than full price offer or, you know, not doing their inspection at time of binding. That's because we've seen all the danger. And every time we make a decision that is not followed by a rule that we've made, we take that seller closer to foreclosure. Okay? The bank doesn't care how you play this game, but the clock is ticking.
So I assume you've got more about this on your website, right?
Yes.
All right. RhondaDuffy.com for the blog?
Yes, RhondaDuffy.com.
All right. Sounds good. This has been Real Estate Insight. Rhonda, thanks so much.
Thanks. I'll see you next week.
You bet. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Kling is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
35 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones. Deb joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hey, Deb.
Hi, Elise.
What can I do for you today?
I have a question. We refinanced our house back in January of 2008, and at that time, we were not underwater with this refinancing, and it was refinanced at 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, I believe it was last year, they sent, you know, they send out these notices of refinancing for a lower mortgage rate. And so we called and we went into a branch to refinance, and at that time they told us that we could not refinance because it was a HARP that we refinanced under, and we, unbeknownst to us, when we did that refinancing, we were totally unaware that it was a HARP refinancing.
And in 2008,
yes,
you had a HARP refinance. I didn't even think the program had started in 2008.
That's what they told us.
Okay.
Told us that was the kind of loan that we refinanced at that time, which is why we could not refinance when we went in to get the lower rate last year. And then this year they send us out another notice to lower our mortgage rate. And, you know, we were thinking about going in and talking to them again. The balance on the house is $112,000.
Uh-huh. And what's the house worth? What are homes selling for in the area?
I really can't speak to that. It's different prices, but there are...
Who's sitting next to you feeding you information? Is that your husband?
Yes.
Because I can hear him talking, and then you talking, and I can't quite hear what he's saying. But let's sort of talk about this for a minute.
Yeah.
First of all, your loan is at 5%.
Right.
Can you afford your loan?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's no problem paying the mortgage. It's just that, you know, I'm kind of upset that they were not straightforward or on the up and up when we did this the refinancing.
Well, okay. So let's take that. Let's talk about that for a moment, because again, I can't even. If you did get a HARP refinance, it would have been the very first one that was done. But I didn't even think HARP was actually by 2008 that HARP was actually there. So the first possibility is that the person who refinanced your loan, whoever the people were who told you that, they didn't know what they were talking about. And I don't know if that's the case or not. But the second thing is that if you have... You're missing really key pieces of information, Deb. When you tell me that you don't know what your house is worth, that you don't know what's selling, yeah, in the neighborhood.
Well, the house is assessed at $85,000.
But the assessment is a tax assessor.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the reality of the marketplace.
Oh, okay.
So that's irrelevant. What's really relevant is when you step out on your front door and you look around, how many foreclosures are in your neighborhood or short sales, and how many have sold in the past however much time, and what else is selling. Those are the relevant numbers, because if you don't have any equity in your property, if your property is only worth $112,000 and your mortgage is $112,000, I can tell you that there will be no conventional lenders who want to who will refinance you.
Then why are they sending out these notices?
I don't know what you got.
Well,
what did you get?
A notice to refinance, lower your mortgage rate.
Okay, did you call them?
Not yet, because we did that, I think it was last year, and this is, actually, that was the first time we were aware that the house was under a HARP mortgage.
Okay. Well, I will just say to you that I don't know, this may be a new thing. You may not have been under HARP. Somebody may have been... have miscommunicated that. But even if you were under a HARP and it was from 5 years ago, you may still be able to refinance. But let me just be really clear about where HARP refinances are, because they're not at 3.5%. If you don't have 20% equity in your property, then the best you might get is 4.5%. You're at 5%. It's not going to be worth your while to refinance, even under another HARP loan. So you're missing really key pieces of information that would tell you, like, I can hear the outrage in your voice, but I'm not sure you have any cause to be outraged.
Yeah.
What interest rate were you at when you got refinanced to 5%, which in 2008 was a really great interest rate, by the way?
It was, I think it was 6.5.
So you went from 6.5 to 5%.
Right.
So historically, up until like the last 5 or 10 years, 5% was unheard of. Then it became 4% was unheard of, and now 3.5% is unheard of. But unless you have 20% equity and perfect credit, you're not going to get 3.5%. So you have to understand what your home is really worth, and you've got to do your homework.
Okay.
And then you can shop around, because just because you get this one offer doesn't mean that you only have to go to your own lender. You can shop it around and see what anybody else says about where your credit is and where your property, you know, has the equity that you have in your property. And if you have equity, you're driving this. And then you can refinance to a 15-year loan at 3%, let's say, which might be good for you.
Yeah, I think the big mistake that we made, and you just mentioned, was that we didn't shop it around. When they initially made the offer, we went with this bank without doing some further research.
You got to do your research.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm good with being outraged when you have something to be outraged about, and Lord knows, there's plenty to be outraged at banks about these days, right?
Yeah.
They're getting it from all over. Just this week, we see that the checks they're sending out under this foreclosure settlement bounced.
Oh.
Can you imagine? You've been kicked out of your house, foreclosed on, maybe you had made your payments on time and they took your house away. You get a check, finally, after all this time, and then it bounces. Like, you could be outraged about that. I could be outraged about that. I was outraged, actually, earlier this week about that. But, you know, this, I'm not sure you need to be mad at anybody but yourself at this moment. And even then, you still got a good deal. You were at 6.5%, and you went to 5%.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll definitely do our research.
Do some looking around, and you may find that you do have... that the property values are really at $85,000 and your balance is $112,000, and I can tell you nobody's going to refinance you.
Yeah.
Even your HARP refinance wouldn't save you much, because you'd still have to pay costs and fees with it.
Yeah.
And then you're going to say, you know what, I'm better off staying where I am. If your property, if you do your research and your property comes back worth $130,000 or more,
yeah,
there are all kinds of lenders who would be delighted to talk to you.
Okay. That makes sense.
All right, let me know what happens, okay, Deb?
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great Sunday. 44 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You know, again, folks, you have to do the homework. You have to figure out what your ground zero is. You have to understand where your place is in the ecosystem of your neighborhood. And if you're like Deb and the neighborhood hasn't turned around yet and you cannot go by what the tax assessor's office says, that number is irrelevant. in the marketplace. That is not what appraisers do. They don't go to the tax assessor and pull the what the tax assessor thinks your property is worth. That number is like over a year or so older, right? They do it in arrears. They go out and they look at the property prices and then they readjust. But Deb's property might be in a really hot neighborhood, and now those properties, all the foreclosures have sold, and all the other properties are now bidding at $125,000, $130,000, and her house has actually got positive equity, and then she can go out and talk to people. Start with your real estate agent. Go talk to some real estate agents about what's selling. Go visit houses for sale in the neighborhood. It's Sunday. There should be open houses all over the place. Go to a few. See what the properties look like. See what the lenders, the real estate agents are asking for them. And then talk to those real estate agents about what else is selling. Why did they price the home there? You'll get gloms of really useful information that will help you understand where you are and where your property is and what you can do next. But without that information, it's like you're shooting blind. You have no idea what you're doing. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Debbie joins us on the line. Hey, Debbie, what are you thinking about this Sunday?
Hi, Elise. I wanted to comment on your take on the employment situation and tell you my experience, which I'm sure is mirrored by so many people. I used to work for a very major financial company, used to manage probably as much money as a small country. Eventually the world collapsed. I had enough put away to support my home and my three horses for 3 years before I had to walk away, and that lovely bank wouldn't work with me with my almost perfect credit score. But I had all of these resumes out before I was offered a position, lo and behold, by one of the monster banks. Let me tell you about what the environment is inside. And I don't hear this lament yet. I'm a very hard worker. I worked at this place for just over 2 years, had excellent numbers. The abuse of employees is frightening, and they take advantage of this because for every person that is in a position, there are hundreds of others, you know, in line waiting to take whatever is available. They skirt the law on so many issues. They hire some wonderful people and then squash them. We all need to do more today than we needed to do maybe 5 or 10 years ago. More is required. But what they squeeze the life out of you. They squeeze the life out of you, and you often live in an environment of fear.
It sounds like it was not a good experience. Would that be just putting too fine a point on it for you, Debbie?
Well, you know, I think the point
terrible.
Is, just except as, you know, I kept my resume circulating. I had a wonderful manager. It certainly wasn't her. It was pushed down. And it was almost like the emperor's new clothes that, you know, no one could believe what was going on. And, but, you know, this is what it is. Warren Buffett likes their numbers. I wish he'd do an expose on the inside. But I continue to circulate my resumes. And like everybody else, you know, you are overqualified. But fortunately, as of very, very recently, my former manager, who knew how I had worked previously and who left another major company after 18 years of good service, I'm going elsewhere. But, you know, I feel for so many of my fellow employees in the bank who really felt they had no choice and were just so worn out. They said that when they were not working, they just wanted to sleep. And
where are you now, Debbie? Did you stay with the bank? Are you working elsewhere?
I just gave notice about 2 weeks, just less than 2 weeks ago. And I loved my immediate team. I loved my manager, but it was bizarre. It was so inefficient. There are so many things that are wrong that I just wish somebody would do an expose on the inefficiency of banking and how it treats its employees, because any company knows their most important customer are their employees. And
it's not a good situation for you, but I'm glad. I hope that being employed gave you a leg up in finding a different job, because when you're employed, it is so much easier to find another job. as so many people who have seen, and I just pulled some statistics. We had another caller who just wanted to know a little bit more about what it's like for people, this aging workforce, and people who are a little bit older and understand that, that this is what's going on. And truly, the workforce is aging, and the employment of people age 55 and older has increased to an all-time high of over 40%. And by 2016, one-third of the total workforce is going to be age 50 and older, and is going to increase to 115 million people by 2020. So there has to be room for people who are older and experienced, who have some thinking going on, and this higher level of experience. And so I hope that your next job, that becomes valued, as opposed to you feeling so persecuted by it. And it's terrible, but I'm really glad you've left, because clearly when you're that unhappy, you're just not as productive as you could be. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Glink Thursday. We're introducing something really fabulous, and you're going to want to be there. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. Christina joins us on the line from Conyers. Hey, Christina.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I have a house that I can't even get a real estate agent to even try to sell.
How many have you spoken with?
Four.
Okay, and why won't they sell your house?
We owe $62,000, and houses in the neighborhood are selling for half that at best, and mm-hmm. at worst, the house next door to me sold for the taxes that were owed on it, not even more than $10,000.
Okay.
So, we're not living there. In 2006 was when we put it on the market, because I didn't feel safe in the neighborhood anymore, and we couldn't sell it, so we rented it, and the renter's been there for all these years. I've had the same renter, so I've had really good luck in that. So I feel like if I put it on the market myself, I probably won't get what we owe on it. And we actually lost money on it last year because the house is in such disrepair. And I feel like I'm pouring money into a black hole trying to keep it, you know, livable.
It's time to let this house go, Christina.
Well, I'm afraid, I mean, we have perfect credit.
You won't have perfect credit after this, but unless you've got $40,000 to just throw at this house, you're going to be in trouble with it. And you're going to be in trouble with it for a really long time, and you're going to have to put $10,000 into fixing it up on top of everything else. So it's time to just let it go. Turn it back to the bank and find your ground zero, which is going to ruin your credit for a while. Hopefully you're already living in the house you want to live in. And over the next 5 years, you'll be able to make good on it. But if you don't feel safe going there, nobody else is going to feel safe living there. And that's the sad truth about it. Let it go. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be rebuilding America one house at a time, coming up next on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
It's 7 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. During the break, I did some research and heard from some people on Twitter. If you're not following me on Twitter, there's such a great conversation going right now between having what you can do to get a job. We were talking about that in the first hour, the unemployment rate and people who are over the age of 50 who are employed, what the percentages are changing in that country. So that conversation is going on Twitter. And then I got a tweet from another listener who said that definitely HARP was not around in 2008, which is what I had said to Deb, that she must have actually had the very first HARP loan if that was the case. But I also didn't think that it was out there. And Carl said, yes, it was March of 2009, which is what I then went and looked up on the MakingHomeAffordable.com site. And sure enough, HARP is much, much later. So it's unclear to me what kind of a refi Deb got. But what she really got, it sounds like, was bad customer service from her lender, somebody who just didn't know what they were doing and misread a file, or her loan was misclassified, and she's now, you know, suffering from that. But just to be really clear, and it says this on the MakingHomeAffordable.gov site, you can see this yourself. When you are looking for a loan under HARP, right, under the Home Affordable Refinance Program, MakingHomeAffordable.gov says this, you can shop around. You can actually go and shop around and see what other lenders are offering. You don't just have to go to your own lender. I feel like I say this every week, but I know everybody listens at different times of the show, so maybe they haven't heard it. But you can, under Making Home Affordable, under HARP, you can shop around and try and find the lender that wants to help you. And Deb clearly didn't find that, but she should shop around, and she should understand what her home is worth. If you don't understand what your home is worth, it is really, really difficult to understand what your options are going to be. Once you figure out what your home is worth, then you can go and find the lender who's going to be able to help you. You will understand your options, but you have to understand what your house is worth, whether you have equity or you don't have equity. If you're underwater or break even, nobody in the conventional world is going to be able to help you. It is only going to be about HARP. But if you have equity, and more people are having equity, even in the greater Atlanta area, there will be other lenders who are interested in helping you. You can find out more at MakingHomeAffordable.gov. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Interest rates went down to near historic lows again this week. I will talk about that in a moment. Some lines are open, but we're going to go to Susan right now in Duluth. Hi, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My husband and I, we own a townhouse that we currently rent. It's out of state in South Carolina, and we're currently at 6.75% because it's an investment property.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously would like to take advantage of doing a refi to get a lower interest rate, but what we're being told is because it's an investment property, that's the issue. If we were to take it as a second home and no longer rent the property, then we, of course, could qualify for a lower rate. There's been a little bit of a gray area on our part because some of the stipulations we're hearing from the big banks that we've talked to about refinancing, they're saying once it's a rental property, it has to be off the market for a full calendar year before we could qualify as a second home.
So here's the thing, Susan. There are lenders that are refinancing investment properties. Do you have any equity in this property?
We do. We currently owe $33,000 on the property. It's worth about $65,000.
Okay. So let me just say, first of all, getting a lender to refinance anything at under $50,000 or $70,000 is really hard. You just simply don't have enough money.
Okay.
Now, you may be able to get a home equity line of credit, and there are banks that are lending for that because you do have a significant amount of equity in this property, 50%. So you may be able to get a home equity line of credit, pay it off, but that may not be lower than, 6.75%.
Right.
If you were going to borrow $50,000 and the house is worth $65,000, right, you might be able to get a lender interested, but you simply don't owe enough on this property.
Okay.
How long have you had the loan?
We've had it about 10 years.
Yeah, it may not even be worth refinancing at this point. Because of the fees that you would pay, you might pay $5,000 to refinance your loan. It would what your real APR would be would just be blown way out of proportion.
Right. Okay.
So you should not. Are you making enough in the rent to cover the property?
Yes.
So are you making some money on it?
Not a lot. I mean, by the time we pay, because it's a townhouse, it's in a community, it's got regime fees
mm-hmm.
that continue to go up. So we were thinking, by the time we pay a management fee to help us rent the property as well as the regime fees, and even though the mortgage is very small, it's a small college town, so the rents are not exponentially. They're not double. obviously what everything else is. So we were thinking, is there a way that we could capitalize maybe on the lower interest rates to squeeze out a little greater margin each month?
But you might be saving $30.
Okay.
It's so little that you've got, even if you could find a lender, you have so little that you would be saving. I mean, maybe it would be $100 a month. Maybe.
Okay.
Only because you've had the loan for 10 years and you've paid it down.
Right.
So really, I think, you have to decide if this is a long-term play for you, if property prices are going up, if this is something that next year it might be worth $70,000 and then you unload it, or you think that over time the rents are going to go up, you're going to pay down this loan, and it's going to go away. You have to decide what the long-term strategy is for this property.
Okay.
So you might just say, well, I'm getting $3,000 a month net income, and after I pay taxes on it, it's hardly worth the energy.
Right. Okay.
And then you should sell it. And when you sell it, you should think about doing a 1031 tax-free exchange on this property. I talk about this in this new webinar on investing in real estate, because a 1031 allows you to defer any money you've made on it. So what did you originally pay for the property?
About $44,000.
So you do have a small amount of gain, and I'm sure you've been depreciating this asset, so you're going to have to recapture that depreciation. And if you do a 1031, it just defers all of that. So what I would think about doing is trying to find another property where you might actually be able to capitalize on it and do better.
Okay.
And think about then doing a 1031 once you find that new property, selling this property, doing the 1031, deferring the taxes, pouring it all into the new property, which has to be priced at least $65,000, but maybe you'll have a better chance at building something more interesting, having an investment that's actually going to pay out for you over time.
Okay.
So that's what you should think about, and then decide whether that future is the future you want, or you want out of the investment business altogether. I guarantee that if you're renting something out and the rents would cover the price at $65,000 and make a little profit for somebody, there will be a buyer who wants that property.
Okay. Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Susan. Thanks for calling the show. So this Thursday, this is a great segue for me, folks, because this Thursday we're announcing the webinar series, Intentional Investor, How to Be a Wild Success in Investing in Real Estate. It's a 9-part webinar series, over 3 hours of information. It's as if we were doing a half-day event, but instead of doing it, we're doing it on video so that everybody can take advantage of it. Because whenever I announce these events, people who can't get there are like, well, what do? I can't get there. So we have this 9-part webinar series. We're going to be announcing all the details in my newsletter on Thursday. So you can sign up online at thinkglink.com. And you know that the newsletter subscribers get the first dibs on everything. You can follow me on Twitter, @glink. That's where you're going to find out about it. And then next Sunday, I'm going to talk about it again and let you know what you can do to access it, because I am just really, really excited about it. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Tim joins us on the line from Covington. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So what's going on in your world today?
I tried to refinance about a year and a half ago through this HARP program.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a mortgage broker, and he told me that I would have to go to my mortgage holder because my loan was not held by Fannie Mae. I think at the time it was held by Freddie Mac. And that if it isn't held by Fannie Mae, you don't qualify for the HARP program.
No, it has to be. That is not true. It's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. If it's not held by either of them, you won't qualify for HARP.
Okay.
But that said, lenders are doing some specific refinances for properties that are underwater, severely underwater, for properties that aren't necessarily held by Fannie and Freddie, or that for some other reason don't qualify for HARP.
Okay, so I should try again.
You should try again, but not just with a mortgage broker. You should go talk to a bunch of different lenders and see what they're saying about it. And you can verify through makinghomeaffordable.gov. There are links there. You can verify whether your loan is held by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac.
Well, thank you.
All right?
Okay.
Thanks for calling the show. 18 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Janet joins us on the line. Hey, Janet.
Hi, the caller that you had a couple callers earlier, we were talking about her townhouse that
Susan.
She's renting out.
Yeah?
Yeah. And you mentioned a HELOC, and I thought, oh, gosh, I wanted to know. Do you know if interest on a home equity line of credit is tax deductible, you know, like your mortgage interest?
Yes, it is.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Sally. Oh, that's great. Okay.
Is that all you, and what are you going to do with your, do you have a home equity line of credit?
No, I don't, but I'm thinking of maybe, well, later this year, maybe next year, doing a little work on my house, and I would really like to keep a hold of my cash that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, maybe home equity line of credit, but I don't know if it's tax deductible.
It is,
when you
it
mentioned
is tax,
it to that lady.
Well, it is tax deductible. It is, their lenders are now doing them again, which they weren't. You will still need to have plenty of equity in your of your property.
Of equity.
Great. So then
Job.
You would probably be able to get one, and then you just have to see exactly how much you would pay for that, because they're not nearly as cheap as doing the regular mortgage.
Yeah, I know.
But it sounds like it might be a really good option for you. So I would certainly go talk to your lenders. But yes, it is tax deductible. Up to, I believe it's $100,000. Now remember, if you are in an upper tax bracket though, pretty much anything over $250,000 adjusted gross income, that mortgage interest deduction fades away to basically nothing. And if you get hit by the AMT, it pretty much negates your mortgage interest deduction anyway. So just something to keep in mind, that mortgage interest deduction, which I think is going to go away anyway, probably over the next couple of years as we look to close the deficit, that's going to be something that I think may get hit, despite the fact that the real estate lobby is the most powerful in all of D.C. 404-872-0750. It's 20 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. We'll be back in a moment with a prize pack, the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack, so stay tuned for that, and more of your questions next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
It's 26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. It's time for our McDonald's WSB Weekend Prize Pack. Today we have, this is great value, $350. It includes a $250 gift certificate for IT training, courtesy of Brightbox Training, and a pair of tickets to see Tony Bennett in concert with Jackie Evancho and the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra on May 31st at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. Tony Bennett. Oh, so great. Anyway, the prize pack value, $350. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller. Dial now to the prize pack line, 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. We will take the fifth caller. Be nice to Crystal. She's going to take your calls today. Yes, Crystal is back in the pocket. So, great, awesome prize pack. Good luck to everybody. We're going to take a short break. When we come back after news, weather, and traffic, there's some more news with that bomb scare going on, or that package. I don't know what they found, or they closed off part of the traffic. We're going to follow that. And, of course, tomorrow morning we have all the latest on what's going on with the Boston bomber and the follow-up to the madness of last week. So stay tuned to News Talk WSB for that as well. Our number, 404-872-0750, taking your questions next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour on News Talk WSB. This is the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, online. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you are interested in investing in real estate, this Thursday, through the newsletter, we are going to be announcing something very, very exciting with this nine-part webinar series that I've created, The Intentional Investor. and I want you to be a part of it. But the only way you're going to find out about it first is to be a part of the newsletter. So thinklink.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. We'll be announcing interesting information about it. And then next Sunday, I'll sort of talk to everybody at large. But if you want to be among the first, the chosen, the few, you're going to have to sign up for the newsletter or follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Let's go back to the phones. Emma joins us on the line from Sandy Springs. Hi, Emma.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. What's going on in your world?
Well, fine. I have a Freddie or Fannie, I can't remember which, at 5.75. I'm not underwater, and I'd like to lower the rate or the time of the loan right now. But I've been told by my mortgage holder that I qualify for the HARP II, even though I don't have income for the last year. I had some sickness. So since March, I've called my lender each month to be told to call back next month.
Why do they keep? What do they say when they say call back next month?
They don't have it available, and I'm just, I feel like I'm almost getting, you know, a line, as it were.
Well, I think you are getting a line, or maybe you aren't understanding what it is they're telling you, because HARP requires income. You have to have income. So if you don't have income, you can't qualify
for it. Well, I have minimal income.
Do you have income that would allow you to qualify for the loan?
Well, they tell me that I am qualified.
But yet they are, every time you call back, they say, no, you're not.
Well, no, they say, and it sounds like it's they are not able to, they haven't received, you know, the blessing of whoever.
I don't know what that means.
It doesn't sound like it's my problem. It sounds like it's their problem. They haven't yet achieved something that they have to do in order to be able to do it. So
none of that makes any sense to me.
Okay, well, it doesn't to me. That's why I'm
And I'm going to say what I've said earlier on this show, which is you have to shop around. And if you truly can qualify for HARP, then you can qualify for HARP with lenders across the board.
Okay.
There are like 44 lenders that you can shop around at. And if you go to makinghomeaffordable.gov, it tells you who you can talk to.
Good.
You can also get free advice from a HUD-approved housing counselor who can work with you and talk to your mortgage company.
Okay.
And you can, that number is on, I'll give it to you now, but it's also on the makinghomeaffordable.gov site. It's 888-995-4673. 888-995-HOPE, HOPE. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And if you know, I'm just going to throw this out there, Emma, but if you don't understand, and I don't mean just you, Emma, but you, if you're listening to this show right now and you are getting a runaround, or you think you're getting a runaround, all the standard stuff that I've said for years applies. You must work your way up the food chain. You can ask for a supervisor. You can talk to somebody at the Hope for Homeowners program. You can go to Making Home Affordable and arm yourself with information and understand that you can talk to other lenders about getting a HARP refinance. You don't just have to sit there and take it from whoever is on the other side of the phone. That person may not be trained. They may not know what they're doing. It could be the first day on the job. You don't know who you're talking to. Half the time, if you just hang up and call back again, you're likely to get somebody who knows more than the person you just talked to. It's a sad state of affairs with customer no service, but that is what is going on at so many places right now. So if you don't understand something, it's on you to take it to the next level and figure out exactly what you qualify for. Nobody is going to hand anything to you on a platter. And as soon as you understand that, you can get on with the business of fixing and rebuilding your life. 404-872-0750 is our number. Sam joins us on the line. Hi, Sam.
Hi. How are you, Elise?
I'm fine, thank you. What's on your mind today?
I bought a rental property last year and was going through filing the taxes and was doing the depreciation section, and I was wondering what your thoughts were in regard of depreciation, whether or not we should depreciate, and if we should, which one, because there are a couple of different options available. I picked the most popular one using the MACRS over 27.5 years, but I was wondering what your thoughts were
Well, first of all, my understanding is that you're required to take depreciation. It's not an option.
Okay.
So you don't get to take it or not take it. It's, you know, when we've had our tax experts on the show, they've said over and over again, you're required if you have a rental property to take it. Then the question is, are you an active investor or a passive investor? Most of us are passive investors. We're not in the real estate business as a business. If you were, then you could take the active stance versus passive. But most people are passive, and that will have an effect. 27 and a half years of depreciation is pretty standard, so I think that you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
Okay, all right. That's all I had. Do I win that $350 gift card?
No, unfortunately, you do not. This is not even the line to call for that. We have a different prize pack line. Georgia of Marietta won it this week, and congratulations to Georgia. 404-872-0750. Deborah joins us on the line from Morrow. Hey, Deborah.
Hey, Elise. It's so nice talking to you.
Nice to have you.
I understand you were just talking to Emma, and I know how she feels. There's a lot of single women out here, and we feel very intimidated.
So I think that's a really interesting statement. Why do you feel intimidated?
Well, I'm just now starting to learn. I'm taking baby steps right now, and I called my bank, and I told them I would like to refinance. And I said, it is a Fannie Mae loan. It's at 6.25 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have 20 years left on it. And he's telling me, I said, I want a 15-year. We don't do 15-year. We do 20 and 30. And I'm thinking, no, I think you're not telling me the whole truth. And then he says, listen to this. If you have PMI on your loan that you do not qualify for HARP, so I'm going to the website that you recommended, and I'm going to start doing some studying today.
All right. So let me just say something about feeling intimidated. I think women and men, but women feel intimidated around financial stuff when they haven't armed themselves with information. I think when you called, you were hoping to get information from your lender. And I think what happened was you realized you don't even know enough to know what questions to ask. So I think studying up first and learning what you can on the internet so that you actually have an idea of what to ask and when they are or are not telling the truth is really helpful. And so I'm glad you're going to do that. Second thing, when a lender tells you that they don't do a type of loan, they may be telling you the truth. And what they're really telling you is they can't get their investors. They don't want that business right now. When they price a loan way above what everybody else in the marketplace is, they're saying, Deborah, we don't want to do these types of loans right now. We're not getting paid enough, or we're not making money on these loans, or there's no profit in it for us. It's more profitable for us to do 20-year loans and 30-year loans. That interest rate is a higher price. The 15-year loans, we don't want to do those. And so you have to say, fine, there are a lot of other lenders in the sea. I'm going to go find somebody. If I want a 15-year loan, that's what I'm going to do. And I think a 15-year loan is the right loan for you because you only have 20 years left. By dropping the interest rate down 3%, where you could go all the way down to 3.25% on a 15-year loan, you'll probably even pay less than what you're paying now, and you've shaved 5 more years off the loan. And in my mind, that's how you build a home run refinance, right? You lower the interest rate, you lower the monthly payment, you watch your costs, you really have to manage this process. So I love that you're out there starting to learn about it. Now let's address this whole issue of private mortgage insurance.
Uh-huh.
People who got private mortgage insurance were people who did not put 20% down. Now, did you get an 80-20 loan or an 80-10, like a piggyback mortgage? What did you get?
No, a piggyback mortgage.
You just had like a 90% loan, and you now have private mortgage insurance.
Yes.
Are you underwater with your loan?
Yes.
How much are you underwater? What's the property price?
Oh, it's about $40,000. I'm in Clayton County.
Okay. So you have to figure out if you have a conventional loan or not. And if you have a conventional loan, even if it's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, even if you have PMI on it, you should qualify for HARP. But to be sure, go to makinghomeaffordable.gov. give a call to the HUD-approved housing counselor. Have them call your lender with you. And then once you get that information, and you can ask the HUD-approved housing counselor about your loan, then you can go to other lenders and start that investigating and understanding what it is you qualify for.
Okay, I will.
And you totally can do this, and I don't want you to let anybody intimidate you.
All right.
You can do this.
All right, I will do it.
All right, and then I want you to call me back next week and let me know what happens.
Okay, I will. This is my assignment.
Okay. You've got your homework. You go do it, and I will talk to you next week. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. TJ joins us on the line. Hi, TJ.
Hey, how are you doing, Miss Link?
I'm good, thank you. What can I do for you?
Okay, I've been out of college for like a year, and I just wanted to really go off that call you had earlier. She had a situation where she was happy about her place of employment. And it brought up this question with me. I'm a year out of college, as I said it earlier, and it's hard to find a job and get my career rolling, especially with every opening demanding that the applicant has at least some kind of experience.
Well, what have you been doing for a year?
Trying to apply for various jobs, and I'm in the process of enrolling in the military.
All right. Well, if you're enrolling in the military, that is going to be your job. But what I've told people for years about getting a job out of college is you have to present yourself in the right way. Your problem could be that your resume isn't right. If you can't get a job, you should be volunteering so that you can, in your line of field that you want to go into. If you want to understand where your place is, you should be getting mentoring. You can go to score.org. You can find a mentor who can help you. You should be volunteering in areas that are related to the field that you want to go into. These are all ways for you to start to get the experience that you need to leverage up. And just throwing your resume out there, if it's not a well-written resume, I can understand why you're not getting any traction. You have to start in a sort of logical way and think through the whole job thing. I look at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of resumes every single year. And what I see is that there are so many kids, fresh out of college, young adults, who don't understand how to present themselves. When I look at LinkedIn, like, are you on LinkedIn? Are you using LinkedIn to find different opportunities for yourself? They don't know how to present themselves on LinkedIn. Their Facebook pages, we go and check those, are full of inappropriate things. So you have to make your Facebook page private. They're tweeting out things that are inappropriate. These are all things that employers look at today. And if you're not out there making sure that your online reputation is pristine, again, it's clear why you're not getting traction. So you've got to take care of all of those basics before you can get a job. But you're a college graduate. You're applying for the military. If you actually get into the military, that's going to be your job for the next probably 4 to 6 years. And while you're there, hopefully you're going to get some training in a different area where you can then leverage that back into the commercial sector. So I hope it goes well. But take a look at your resume. Take a look at all of your online things that you do. And try and figure out where it is you can make a difference. 404-872-0750. It is 12:50 on the Elise Kling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. 56 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Let's go back to the phones. Sandra joins us on the line. Hey, Sandra.
Hi, Elise.
What's going on?
Well, I know we're running out of time here, so I'll try and be brief. I just wanted to share with your listeners that I just got a 3.5 with my lender on a HARP 2. I have a $99,000 balance, and my house is only worth about $50,000.
Wow.
And I got a 15-year at 3.5. My credit score is 806. Half my income is pension, and half of it's part-time work. They were able to approve me in 3 weeks.
Well, that sounds fantastic. It sounds like
I just want to encourage all the listeners to keep trying, just keep going at it. My real question is, I got a report from Equifax that I don't understand. And it's about key factors that adversely affect my credit score.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why. I've got about 8 credit cards with $72,000 worth of credit limit. I have one Amex card that has a $45 a month internet charge. I pay the other Amex in full every month because I don't use a debit card. I only use that one for my living expenses. I had a $500 balance on Lowe's and a $1.74 on Citibank. And they're telling me that I have too many accounts with balances and the number of bank or revolving accounts with balances. And I don't understand that.
Well, but your credit score is 806.
But I don't. What I want to understand is why this small amount that I actually carry is adversely affecting my credit score.
But I would say it's not adversely affecting your credit score because your credit score is 806 out of 850, right?
Okay.
So it's really, you can't get much higher than where you are. I mean, I suppose you could get to 820, but it's irrelevant at this point. So you have what you have. In their crazy math algorithmic world, maybe if you had 6 credit cards instead of 8 credit cards, that would boost your credit score by 5 points or 17 points or whatever it is. But it's irrelevant. You've got an 806 credit score, the envy of almost everybody else who's listening to this show today. Take a deep breath, Sandra. It's going to be just fine. Pay off your balances, keep it clean, just like you're doing, and you're going to continue to have the best level of credit. All right, folks, the music's playing. That means we're out of time. Thanks for joining me. Don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. We've got the Intentional Investor webinar series on investing in real estate coming out on Thursday. Follow me on Twitter for details. Have a great week, everybody.